All right. Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksuvos Ayin Tes for the accounts of the out there, and I got two sitting in this room right now. So you're going to love today's Daf, and as far as the rest of us is concerned, so please enjoy as I try to struggle through basic accounting and try to explain concepts, which quite frankly are definitely sophisticated. But today's Daf is every Daf is interesting, but today's Daf is really interesting, and we're going to start today with a story. But before we start with the story, let's set ourselves up. We are in the eighth parak of the Masechta. And we're talking about nechse melug. So assets that come that come into the marriage. Again, there are two types of assets that she can come into a marriage with: nechse tzom barzel, nechse melug. This parak, the eighth parak of the Masechta, is dedicated to nechse melug. Nechse tzom barzel is not being discussed right now. Nechse tzom barzel is appraised at the time of the marriage. The appraised value is put into the ksuva, and the husband has total control over that item. And regardless of whether the item appreciates, depreciates, she is going to always be secured and guaranteed the appraised value. Good, that's nechse tzom barzel. But then now we're talking about nechse melug. And nechse melug, either the assets came into the marriage and assigned as nechse melug. Alternatively, she inherited it while she's married. In either way, so nechse melug. So how is it structured? So the way that it's structured is that it's hers, but he gets to enjoy the dividends. All the parents go to the husband. Good. So that's nechse melug. So so with that stated, so what we're going to be discussing over the course of today is basically most of today is going to be dedicated to a discussion of what qualifies as a Karen, as the principal value of an item, versus the payros, versus the dividends that it gives off. So when you're talking about a field, it's really easy. In other words, the land is a Karen, and the fruit that comes off the land is the payros. In fact, obviously, payros comes from the word pri, which means the fruit. So if you're talking about a land and the fruit that comes off of it, so that's easy now to do accounting. I could do the accounting in terms of establishing what's the principal and what's the payros. But there are going to be other cases in which it's not going to be that clear cut. And are there limits in terms of how much payros he's going to be receiving? Meaning, what if the dividends are producing dividends? What if there are other residuals that come off of it? So how does that qualify? Good. So that's all going to be part of today's daf. Let's enjoy all together. But before we do that, the Gemara is going to tell us a story. Here you have a woman who's already been married. She's widowed. She's divorced. She's already got children, and she's going to get married again. Now, she understands, by the way, this is a woman now who's experienced life, and she understands finances a lot more. And what does she want to do? She wants to protect her assets. The last thing she wants is her husband to go ahead and get her assets. So what does she do? So she creates and I'm going to use terminology that is well above my understanding, but she basically she's going to create some sort of shell corporation in which she's going to try to protect those assets from her husband. And is there a way to do so? And as we're going to see together, the answer is yes. There is a way to do so. So here's this woman now who's going to get married, and she wants to hide her assets from her husband. Is there a way to do so? Sure. Kasvina Labarta. So what she does is that she now, through contract, gifts all of her assets over to her daughter. Now, if you heard me carefully, I said all of her assets. The reason why I said that is because I know of the Gemara upcoming. So right now, we don't know that for sure, but just if you could follow with me, she gifts all of her assets over to her daughter, and she does so contractually. Rashi writes over here that she tells the Eidim, I hope you understand, by the way, the only reason why I'm doing this is to protect the assets from my husband. I don't want my husband to have any control of that whatsoever. I don't want him to get the dividends of those assets. And so therefore, what she does is that through Ishtar, she gifts it all to her daughter. In Savavi Irgasha, the woman was a bit of a Neviah. She got married and she got divorced. Okay. And now, Asala Kameh. So the Rav Nachman. Now she goes to Rav Nachman. And she goes to Rav Nachman. Now, what does she want right now? In other words, her husband didn't get any of the assets. In other words, she properly protected the assets from her husband. And again, the assets, I'm talking not only about the Karen, but the Paris as well. So that was a success. The problem now is that she has to wrangle it from her daughter, right? In other words, her daughter now has a Shtar Matana, in which now she's entitled to all the assets. She acquired it through a Matana. So she goes to Rav Nachman. She says, hey, do me a favor. Right. I got now just my next issue in life, and that is I want to get my assets back from my daughter. So can you help me out? And Kari Rav Nachman l'sharei. Rav Nachman says, sure. Let me have the Shtar Matana. Rav Nachman takes the Shtar Matana and tears it up. Okay, good. No problem whatsoever. Now, It's amazing. Now, what Rav Nachman is thinking is that we understand what the purpose of that Shar Matana was. In other words, effectively, what it was is it was a conditional contract. In other words, it was a perfect understanding. Now I say perfect understanding, by the way. What did the daughter think at the time? I know that's an important question, and it certainly requires more clarification, but from her perspective, it was a perfect understanding that the only reason why I'm writing up this contract is so that I could shield and protect the assets from my husband. So from her standpoint, it was understood why she's doing it. Now, at this point in time, by the way, if you're wondering to yourself, all this seems to be disingenuous, and asset protection is the Gemara basically, is it condoning it? Is it recommending that this is proper practice? That's a hard question, and I'm not prepared to answer the question simply because I don't know. But in other words, we're going through the Gemara together. And it sounds like from the Gemara that the Gemara, from the standpoint of, is this disingenuous behavior? The Gemara doesn't weigh in on that. Gemara seems to be okay with it. Anyway, so Rav Nachman tears up the Shtar Matana, and he tells her, good, no, you have no longer a problem with your daughter because no longer Shtar Matana, I tear it up.
What could she have written in the Shtar?
Oh, perfect. Huh? Good. No, perfect question. I'm gonna ask you to wait. We're going to touch on that very issue. So, Asla Kamad Rav Nachman Kari Rav Nachman Lashari. Okay, Ayin Tesamad Aleph towards the top. So, Asla Rav Anan Lakamid Mar Ukva, and oh, now Rav Anan goes to Mar Ukva, and he wants to file a formal complaint. Like, what's going on over here? So, Amr Le Chazi Mar Nachman Chaklai Hechi Makar Shtar Dinshe, and he says, could you see what Rav Nachman is doing? Now, I'm being nice in the way I'm reading the Gemara. He doesn't refer to Rav Nachman as Rav Nachman. He calls them Nachman Chakla, which is a very pejorative term. And again, how is he describing somebody else like that? All right, basically a farmer. Okay. Anyway, hard to defend such language, but okay. Anyway, but he's filing a formal complaint. Like Rav Nachman tore up a shtar. How does he do that? It's a legitimate shtar matana. It's a bona fide shtar matana. And Rav Nachman says, yeah, but I know what the intention of the gifter was, and I'm following the intention. Like a formal complaint is lodged. So Hechi Mikre Shtar Deinshe, he's tearing up people's shtarim. It's crazy. So Amalei, so Mar Ukva says to Rav Anan, okay, let's take a moment, let's pause, let's breathe, and do me a favor. And Emily Izi Gufa Duvda Hecha Hava. Like, could you go over the details with me? Like, share with me a little bit more. Like, what happened? Right? Give me a little more context, please. So Amr Le Hachivachi Have, so he says, okay, and he gave him all the details. So Amr Le, so now Marukva says to Rav Anan, Shtar Mavreches Kamarta, it's a Shtar Mavreches. Right? It's basically a shtar to shield assets. So Hachi Amar Bichani Lai, Brahidi Amr Shmo Modeh Horani. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Chani Lai, and with a preface of Mora Hora, meaning I do Paskin Halacha, and in Im Yavo Shtar Mavrechli Adia Karena. And he says, look, Shtar Mavrachas, if the entire purpose of the Shtar is just to shield information, just to shield assets. And so what you're doing is now you're gifting all your assets to somebody else as just a means of protecting it. So, what I do is I tear up the Shtar. Meaning I follow the intent of the Shtar and not the literal words of the Shtar.
This is only between the woman and her daughter, but not between the woman and her husband.
Ah, okay, good. So Amalei Rav LeRav Nachman Tamamai Delo Shavik Inish Nafshevi Yav LaAchrinik. So the Gemara says, okay, when do we follow intention? I can understand that if the shtar was written to a third party, but Hani Mila LaAchrinik Aval Lavarti Yahavei. But over here, she's gifting all of her assets not to a third party. She's gifting her assets to her daughter. It could very well be that she's ready to gift all her assets to the daughter. Remember earlier in the Masechta, we discussed numerous cases where parents, the father was gifting all of his assets over to his son, and then the question becomes, does the son have the requirement to at least take care of the father? Anyway, so you can easily make the argument that because she's gifting all of her assets to the daughter, this is not a shell corporation. This is not just a way of protecting assets. Maybe she really does mean to gift all of her assets over to her daughter. So I feel lahachi b'makom barta nafsha adif alai. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I understand that. But you know what? She loves her daughter. I'll tell you who she loves more than her daughter. She loves herself more than her daughter. And so therefore, in this context, meaning looking at all the contextual clues over here, of she got married, she gifted all of her assets to her daughter before she got married, we understand. In other words, she don't take the shtar here literal. It's not meant to be taken literally. It's just a means of protecting assets so that her husband does not get his hands on those assets. Good. And that would be true even with the daughter. People love themselves more than the daughter. The Ramban and Chumash. I've quoted this Ramban before, right? V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. You have to love your neighbor like yourself. So the Ramban and Chumash writes that the Torah over here is exaggerating, right? V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Love others like yourself. The Ramban writes. Ramban and Chumash writes. And there's no way you're gonna love other people more than yourself, right? It's impossible. In other words, people, you love yourself more than you love other people. So what the Torah is telling you is as much as you can, you're going to love others like you love yourself. But ultimately, right, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but we're self-absorbed. It's human nature. We love ourselves more. Anyway, the Gemara here says it.
But the bottom line, is it a valid shtar or not valid shtar? If it's not a valid shtar, then the husband should be able to get
Stay tuned. Phil, you're asking all the right questions. Stay tuned. I'm going to ask you to wait just a little bit longer. The Gemara is going to discuss this just a little bit longer. So, Amalei Rav Rav Nachman, time amai, delo shavakinin, na sheviyav lachrine. Did I just read that? Of course I just read that. Let's go on. Meisve. Okay. So what did we just learn together? So the woman basically is putting together a shell corporation. She wrote over all of her assets over to her daughter in order so that the assets not be handled by her upcoming husband, and then when the marriage terminated, she went back to her daughter and she rescinded the shtar with the support of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman literally tore up the shtar. Okay, so all this is rather amazing. So meitzvei. So the Gemara here quotes a brisa. Rotsa shetavrich nechasa mibala keitzad hi osa. So over here in the brisa, instruction manual, how to protect your assets. Okay, so over here in the brisa. So again, by the way, I'm just going to quickly restate the question I asked earlier. Are we endorsing this kind of behavior? Are we condoning this kind of behavior? It sounds that way.
Yes.
It sounds like the answer is yes. Even though, whatever. I'm just obviously you can see I'm a little bit amazed over the fact that this is fine. This is perfectly fine. So Kate said Yosa Kosef Shtar Pasim Lacherim. Did Rav Shimon Gamliel? So Rav Shimon Gamliel says what you could do is you could write a Shtar Pasim. Now Shtar Pasim is basically a fictitious contract. So look at Rashi over here. Rashi gives a description of Shtar Pasim. Shtar Piusim Shim Efaisa Solakaba Matanazu Lavkias Chusba La Kodemisun Veloshi Yizke Mekabel Zebehem. Okay, it's basically. It's a fictitious document. It's a fictitious transfer of ownership. It's basically a way of protecting assets. It's what we've been describing up until now. Fine. That is the Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel. And the Chachamim said to Rav Shimon Gamliel, are you kidding me? If you have a contract and you are the beneficiary of all the assets, so you know what you get to say to the gifter? You know what? You gave it to me. You gifted it to me. You wrote a contract on it? Well, we're honoring the contract, aren't we? So that's the sheet of the Chachamim. Who disagree with Rishim Gamliel? So, Achetichtov lo me'ayom l'chesha eretza. So if you want to structure the contract correctly, here's what you have to do. What you have to do is that you have to write that the contract is effective immediately, contingent on my approval at a later point in time. You write it tonight. You write it tonight into the shtar. And now this is a bona fide legal document. Okay, and so now, it's so funny. The Chachamim are arguing with Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Not over the moral, the ethical correctness of whether you can or cannot do that. According to the Chachamim, it's fine, you can do it. You just have to structure it properly. And proper structuring of the contract is going to be, make it effective now, immediately, but with a contingency. And I know this is, of all the contingencies, by the way, this is a pretty funny one. What's the contingency? I have to approve it at a later point in time. So if I approve it at a later point in time, good. So then it will be effective, retroactive to the time of the writing of the shtar. If I don't approve of it at a later point in time, okay, so then it goes back to me. Good. So that's how you structure it. So, taima de kasav lehachi, alo kasav lehachi, kanino alo keach. So the Gemara says, okay, now, we are going to assume that in this brisa we just learned together, we're going to follow the sheet of the Chachamim, meaning they are the majority position, and so therefore, effective protection of your assets are going to require you to structure the document as effective now with a Tanai. Now, in the story that we started off our whole discussion this morning, right, the beginning of today's daf. So was the shtar constructed in this manner? No. So the Gemara says, okay. So taima, I know I read this already. Taima de kasav lehachi halokos velehachi kaninu alokeach. So I'm Rabbi Zera lo kasha. So Rabbi Zera says, no difficulty. Habakulan ha b'miksasa. So it depends on in terms of whether or not all of the assets were being given over or partial assets were given over. So and the distinction Rashi explains is very simple. Meaning when you are gifting all your assets before you get married, it's clear. You don't have to write it out. It's clear what are you doing? You're trying to protect your assets. You're shielding your assets from your upcoming husband. And so therefore, do you have to write a Tanai into the shtar? No, you don't have to write a Tanai into the shtar because it's understood. And again, by the way, this is a real subtleties in halacha, meaning it is understood, but at the same time, however, we're not only looking at the literal words of the shtar, but we're also looking at context and intent, and that plays factors in as well. It's amazing. However, if you're only gifting part of your estate over to somebody else, I don't know. Was that a gift? Was that just simply asset protection? I don't know. So when you're only doing partial, so now you have to structure the shtar in the manner that we just described, making it effective now, but on a contingency, only al Tanai. Okay, good.
Maybe it doesn't work with the daughter.
Oh, okay.
The daughter should expect it.
That's what the Gemara that's what the Gemara suggested. The Gemara says, afilu bebarte. Afilu. So the lo kanino lokea kanino baal. So the Gemara says, okay, so effectively this is what Phil was asking earlier. Okay, so now we understand why it is that the daughter, or for that matter, any third party is not going to be on the receiving end, and that is because the shtar is not meant as a shtar, but it was what is meant as a, just as a protection. So now the Gemara says, okay, great. So I get the part that the daughter, or for that matter, any other third party, is not going to actually be receiving the assets. That part I get. How come the husband's not getting the payros? In other words, okay, so it doesn't belong to the other person. So that means effectively, who does it belong to? It belongs to the woman. And she's currently married. And the husband should be entitled to nechse melug. Meaning, we're basically asking the most basic question. If it doesn't belong to anybody else, it means it belongs to her. If it belongs to her, therefore the husband should be able to receive payros from those assets. What's happening over here? So the Gemara says, okay, good. So now we have an opportunity to explain. So the ilo kanilo keach kaniknu baal amar baya asum kinechasum sheyin dum labav aliba de Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, okay, so what I'm going to direct you to now is that last line of the Mishnah. The opening Mishnah here of the eighth parak tells us of Rabbi Shimon's distinction. What is Rabbi Shimon's distinction? So there are nechasim hayiduim and nechasim sheyin yiduim. The husband is going to enjoy payros from only nechasim yiduim. Nechasim she'inam yiduim, the husband does not get payros from those assets. Now, if you're remembering yesterday's daf, what do? We try to give definition. What is nechasim yiduim? What is nechasim she'in yiduim? And the Gemara did struggle a little bit in terms of giving definition. But right now, there is such a distinction. And what we're learning right now is Rabbi Shimon is the halacha, is the accepted halacha, that anything that qualifies as nechasim she'in yiduim, the husband does not enjoy payros from those assets. And once she now contracts this, gifts it over to somebody else, even though, contractually speaking, the assets really do not transfer, as we just learned. But it's ki'ilu he doesn't know about it. And now this is interesting, and Rashi writes this pretty clearly. And that is, he knows about it, but he thinks he's not entitled to it. That qualifies as nechasim she'inam yiduim, and therefore he doesn't get payers from it. That's the Gemara's answer, because we do subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's distinction. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us now to the next Mishnah. Here we are now on the Mishnah, in the middle of Ayin Tesamad Aleph, and from here until basically the next Mishnah, which hopefully we're going to get to. There are two Mishnahs on the Amud Beis. Our goal today is to get to the first Mishnah. So from here until the next Mishnah. So again, the accountants are going to love this. I got a couple here in the room. So the what we're going to do is basically try to qualify. So what is considered karka? What's considered peros? Again, when she comes with assets into the marriage, so she now gets to keep the asset, but he gets to enjoy. And when I say enjoy, by the way, meaning he owns the peros. And so now it's just a simple question. And as we're going to see together this morning, it's not that simple. But now it's just a simple question is, what's a gufa karka and what's peros? So we start with a Mishnah. So the Mishnah starts off, nafluk safim. So let's say now she comes into the marriage with cash. Okay, so now what do you want to do with that cash? So what you want to do is you want to convert that cash into karka. So yilakech mem karka, evahu ocha peros. So what you're going to do now is you're going to convert that cash into property. And so now everything is nice and neat. So that the karka now is hers and the peros are going to be the husband's. Peros at solution in a karka. Now let's say that what comes into the marriage peros, meaning after they get married, she either inherited or she was gifted peros. Peros. What are peros at this point in time? Okay. And I know this sounds funny, but again, if you have an accounting mind, it's all going to make perfect sense. Peros are cash. In other words, because they're coming into the marriage. So right now, this doesn't qualify the peros don't qualify as peros. The peros right now are cash. So what do you do with it? So the mission says, very simple. Peros at solution in a karka, yilakech mem karka v'ocha peros. So now what you're going to do is that this peros now is cash. So go back to what the first point of the Mishnah. You convert the peros into cash. And I'm sorry. Wrong. Let me say it correctly. You convert the peros into karka, and now everything's nice and simple. The karka belongs to her, and he gets to enjoy the peros. So peros are mechubarim b'karka. So now let's say the following. Let's say she inherited a property after she's married. She inherited property, and the property right now has crop on it, connected to the property. How is that going to be assessed? How does that qualify? Does that qualify as peros? Does that qualify as karka? So peros mechubarim b'karka, I'm a Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir says, here's what you do. Shamanoso, kami yafa b'peros, v'kami yafa below peros. So what you do basically is you give it an appraisal. How do you appraise fruit that's connected to the ground? So what you do is that basically there are two appraisals that are going to be done. One appraisal currently as is with the fruit connected to the ground, meaning with the crop already to be harvested. And then you're going to be doing a second appraisal of what would the land be if it didn't have, the crop ready to be harvested. It was just property by itself. Now, what's the difference? The difference is basically going to be the value of the peros that are currently connected to the ground. So now, as far as the most is concerned, yilakech mem karka. Now again, how does that qualify? Is that cash or is that peros? That qualifies as cash. Since that qualifies as cash, what are you going to do with that? At this point in time, we all know. You're going to buy property. So yilakech mem karka v'hu ocha peros. And now he's going to eat the peros. V'chachamim omrim mechubarim l'karka shalom. Now, so that is not going to be qualifying as an asset. But in other words, when she inherited a field and that field had fruit on it, according to the Chachamim, you know what that fruit qualifies as? Peros. So the shalom, so they belong to the husband. Telushim in a karka, shalom. If, however, they were detached from the ground, so that is now considered a cash asset. As a cash asset, so who does that belong to? It belongs to her. So then, yilakech bem karka v'hu ochel peros. Okay, good. So basically now we're going over numerous permutations of basically what is viewed as a cash asset, which belongs to her. What is viewed as a pre that belongs to him. Good. And we gave numerous examples. All right. Oddly enough, if she inherits peros, peros are not peros. In other words, they don't qualify as peros. Peros qualify as a cash asset. Therefore, they're going to be rolled over into property. And again, from this point now going forward, property belongs to her and the future peros are enjoyed by him. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Malkum Shiafa Kocha Bechnisasa, or Kocha Beitziasa. And Malkum Shara Kocha Bechnisasa, Yafa Kocha Beitziasa. So Rabbi Shimon is basically going to make an observation, meaning it's a zero sum game. In other words, if it's going to be a cash asset on the front end, so that means to say that it belongs to her on the front end, but on the back end, it's going to belong to him. And similarly in the other direction. Ketzah. Let's spell this out. So let's say we're talking about where she inherited property with fruit attached to the property. So now, when going into the marriage, shalom, they belong to him, meaning the Mishnah here is following the sheet of the Chachamim, meaning that qualifies as a pre. So b'yitziyasah, so that means to say that's when they get married. Now, what if the marriage terminates, shalom? So now it belongs to her on the exit. Now, utlushim in a karka bechnisasah. So now, if they're detached going into the marriage, detached fruit going into the marriage, what is that? That's a cash asset. So shalom, so that belongs to her. Ubi itziyasah shalom, but at the termination of the marriage, so they belong to him because it is in fact qualifies as a cash asset. Good. So here we are learning a Mishnah together, and it's just a simple question is that what is considered a cash asset that she inherits and therefore rolled over into karka versus what's considered a pre. Okay, now we just learned together that once they're married and she inherits a cash asset, so what do you do with it? You have to buy property. And so now can we talk a little bit about investment strategy? Right, that's why you came to the daf. That's why you came to hear me to talk about investment strategies. Obviously. So pshita, the Gemara says ari abate ara. So the Gemara says, look, if your two alternatives with that cash asset, you have to roll it over into a property. So you need a property, but property comes in many different shapes and forms. So over here, let's say the two choices are either to purchase land or to purchase houses. So which is a better investment? So the Gemara says unequivocally, ara, land is a better investment. And I'm going to encourage you, meaning why land is a better investment. And again, this is from the Gemara's perspective. And you have and I'm wondering out loud, and I don't know what the answer is going to be, but obviously in an agricultural economy, so obviously the Gemara is speaking to an agricultural economy. Mm-hmm. Does the halacha now going to have preferences towards housing if it's not an agricultural economy? I'll ask the question. I don't have the answer, but okay. I think it's a fair question. Anyway, and you'll see Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through all the Rashis over here. Rashi does spend time. He's meticulous in terms of explaining why it is that one investment is better than the other. But for now, right now, I'm just running through the Gemara. So Ara is a better investment. And Rashi points out over here, and what does that mean? It means that, so both parties can now veto how to roll the cash over. Meaning Rashi says, let's say, right, she just got cash, and now they have to buy property with it, and she wants housing and he wants land. So, okay. In other words, because of what the Gemara just instructed us, He's going to win that fight. Similarly, if he wants property, he wants housing, and she wants land, so she'll get to win that fight. Meaning, the way Rashi presents it, land is such a qualitatively better investment. So, if either one of them want land, so you buy land with it. About the Vedikle, let's say your choices of how to roll that cash over into a property investment is that it's either going to be the purchasing of a house or the purchasing of palm trees. So for sure, housing is going to be a better investment. Dikle ilane, let's say it's dekel, palm tree, versus other types of trees. So palm trees are better. And again, if we lived in a more agricultural society, I'm sure we would understand these distinctions much better. Ilane and gufne, let's say it's trees versus a vineyard. So ilani, so for sure, trees are better than a vineyard. Okay, abazardasa, uperi de cavre. Okay, so let's say we're talking about a forest of uzradim. They produce fruit. You'll forgive me, I don't know how to translate this in English. But the fruit that it produces aren't that good. And peri de cavre, in a fish farm. So armila peri v'armila karna. So now, how is that going to qualify? Does that qualify as peros? Does that qualify as a cash asset? In other words, in order for something to be a Karen has to be something that could produce dividends. But if it's something that can't produce dividends, so then it doesn't, it doesn't follow as Karen. So, Klal de Milsa, the Gemara says, here's basically the rule. And that is Gizo Machlif. So so if it reproduces, so Peren. So then it's going to qualify as peros. And engi's a machlif, and if it doesn't reproduce, so then karna, so then it's going to qualify as karen. So, and anything that does not have any kind of not residual, Wrong word. Any if it doesn't have growth opportunities, if it doesn't grow, so then it's so then it that's not going to be that is going to be something which is a Karen. If however it grows something and then it has the ability to regrow, so that growth is considered a pre. And obviously the difference, of course, is whether he's going to get it or she's going to get it. I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rabbi Yoshi, I'm Rabbi Yanavi, I'm Rila, I'm Rabbi Abi, I'm Rabbi Yoshi, I'm Rabbi Yanai, Hagonev, Vlad Behemoth Malug. The Gemara now takes us to another halacha, and that is that what if I steal? What if I steal Behemoth Malug? Okay, so, it's Malug property, but Malug property in the form of an animal. Now, it's kind of funny, by the way, because the Gemara just, you know, the Gemara just took the steering wheel and turned it, and when did this happen? Meaning, right, the up until now, so what could be viewed as Malug properties? So we assume right now it's housing, it's trees, it's land. In other words, real estate. And now what also could be Malug property? So animals as well. And if I may, in just a moment, clothing could also be Malug property. Meaning Malug property is not just limited to land, even though we just talked about how you need to take the cash assets and roll them over into land. But Malug property could be any asset, whether it be movable. Or non-movable. So over here you have the animal, which is a Malug property. And what happens now is that if somebody stole it, and oh, by the way, let me reset the discussion over here, right? I got it mostly right, but now I have an opportunity to correct myself and get it all right. And that is that the thief didn't steal the Behemoth Malug, he stole the Vlad Behemoth Malug. So in other words, this was an animal that she brought into the marriage. After she brings it in, then it had a baby. So how's that baby qualify? That's easy. That's a pre. And that goes to the husband. Good. Somebody stole it. Now, he was caught. What does that mean? He has to make principal restitution, and he also has to pay a second round of restitution, otherwise known as KFO. Okay, now, who's going to be entitled to the kefal? Okay, again.
But you said it belonged to the husband, though.
Huh?
You said it belonged to the husband.
I said that the animal belongs to the husband. So over here now, this is what is the question basically? How to view the kefal? Is the kefal going to be part of the peros, or is it considered something that is outside of the realm of peros? Now, if it's outside the realm of peros, then who is it going to go to? It's going to go to the woman. Watch Gemara go to work. Mishalim, just give me a moment. I'm with you. Just give me a moment. Mishalim Tashlomi Kefal Leisha. So the Kefal payment is going to go to the woman. The Gemara says, "Wow, the Vlad for sure belongs to the husband. And when somebody stole it now and makes restitution for that, obviously the restitution goes to the husband. But that second payment, that second Kefal payment, now is going to go to the woman. How does that work? So come on." So the Gemara says, I don't understand how that works. Meaning, this is a statement made by Rabbi Yanai. Gemara says, I'm not following. Lo ke Rabbana v'lo ke Chananya. It seems to be going like nobody. Meaning, in the moment, we're about to be introduced to the positions of two Tanayim, and it sounds like Rabbi Yanai opted with neither. And that's not an option. Detanya will learn to the Braisa. V'lad behemoth malog labal. Here the Braisa tells us that when I have Vlad behemoth malog, so that goes to the husband. Right, that's an easy one. In other words, that's a pre, clearly. In other words, because the animal is going to regrow and regenerate another Vlad. Right? that's the nature of Vlados. So that goes to the husband, that's easy. Vlad Shivchas Malug Lisha. But when it comes to Vlad Shivchas Malug, so that goes to the woman. Okay, in other words, what does she come into the marriage? She comes in with Shvachos. Right? She has slaves. And with the slaves that she comes into the marriage, so the slave produces a child. So what does that qualify as? What a great question, right? So the Tanakam is of the position that goes to the woman for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. And V'chananya ben Achiyoshi Amar, Asu Vlad Shvachas Malug, Kivlad Behemas Malug. And he says, no, it doesn't go to her, it goes to him. In other words, that's a Vlad, that's a pre. Okay, now, what the Gemara is bothered by is that basically Ben's question, meaning, so what happened over here? The Vlad Behemoth was stolen, and the thief was caught, and now he's paying not only the principal, but also Kefal as well. And Rabbi Yanai says, and you know where that Kefal goes? The Kefal goes to her. What? What does that mean it goes to her? In other words, the animal belonged to him, so he should be receiving the restitution from the thief, and he should be receiving kefal as well. What's happening? So, the Gemara says like this, Afilu tema divrei hakol, and oh, by the way, we just learned a brisa, and the brisa just taught us, unequivocally, that the parents go to the husband. The only thing that's open for a discussion in the brisa is how to view the vlad shivcha. But outside of that, the vlad behema goes to the husband. So now it stands to reason, if the vlad behema goes to the husband, the kefal also should go to the husband as well. So the Gemara says, Afilu tema divrei hakol. Peri tekin la rabbanan, peri de peri lo tekin rabbanan. Okay. So the Gemara makes the following accounting distinction. And that is the following. We say peris go to the husband, and we're going to stand by that. But peri de peri do not go to the husband. Now let's try to be clear about this point of the Gemara over here. This is a real subtlety. And that is that look, peris go to the husband, so what do we learn together? So anything that's going to regenerate, so the outgrowth of dividend is going to go to the husband. If that outgrowth, if that dividend itself produces more dividends, so then that's going to go to, that's not shaykh for the husband, that's going to go to her. Now, a little bit difficult to understand, meaning, let's say that the animal produces an offspring and that goes to the husband. You mean to tell me that if that now, that dividend that he acquires, that belongs to him, if that produces an offspring that goes back to her, it's difficult to imagine. Probably what the Gemara means over here when it says peros to peros is that we're talking about an external residual. An external residual, meaning the kefal. Meaning what the kefal is viewed as is that it is not part of the peros itself, but it's an external residual that comes off of it. If it's external, that is not going to be legislated and instituted to go to the husband. The chachamim were masakin. The husband is owning peros of her properties. But there's a limit, there's a cap to what peros are. Peros are direct dividends that come off of her property. But if it's not a direct dividend, if it's an indirect dividend, like the kefal that's coming now, basically it's considered an outside source coming off of the dividends. So that does not go to him, that goes to her. L'chora, ostensibly, that's what the Gemara means by that.
Wouldn't be the same as when he gets the fruits and he plants and he gets fruits, that's obviously
him. Right, correct.
But this is an outside source.
Correct. Right. Now, Bishlam l'chananya hayne lo cheshin l'misa. So the Gemara says, okay, now as long as we quoted the Braisa, so the Gemara is going to spend a moment discussing this Braisa, and that is that we're trying to understand now, Vlad behemas malug, go to him. Easy. Vlad shivchas malug, so who does that go to? So we just learned the Braisa, the debate between the Tanayim. So the Gemara says, okay, Bishlam l'chananya. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you which one I think is easier to understand. Gemara speaking, not me. So hayne de lo cheshin l'misa. So he's not worried about Misa, he's not worried about death. And as a result of that, what does that mean? It means that the animal that produces a vlad is going to go to the husband because the animal is going to reproduce. Okay. And the same thing is true regarding a shivcha, right? What she produces, I know we're objectifying over here, but in other words, I'm just explaining Pshat and the Gemara. So just like your shivcha produced, your shivcha is going to reproduce. Right? And we're not worried that the shivcha is going to die. Good. And so therefore it qualifies as a keren, and the child is going to qualify as a pri. I get that. But ela rabbana ni chayshul amisa afil avlad behemas malug nami lo. V'ilo chayshul amisa afil avlad shivcha malug nami and nami. So, but the sheet of the chacham makes a distinction. That's hard to understand. Meaning that the vlad behemas malug, that's a pri, and that goes to the husband. But the vlad shivchas malog, oh no, that's not a pre. And what's the difference? Meaning, what must be the explanation of the chachamim? Well, when it comes to the shivcha, I don't know if she's going to reproduce. In other words, she made a child, but who's to say she's going to make another child? She may die. And if it's something that doesn't reproduce or regenerate, so as we learned in the beginning of today's daf, it's not that doesn't file under the category of Karen and Pri. Okay, so the Gemara says, "I'm Rav Huna Bar Chiya, I'm Rav Shmuel Halacha Kecha." I'm sorry, I skipped the answer. It was great. Let me go back. So the Gemara says, well, olam chai shel misa. So the Gemara says, no. Well, he's worried about misa. Meaning, the reason why the vlad shivchas malug is not qualifying as a priest because it doesn't reproduce. The chachamim were concerned it doesn't reproduce. But what about the animal? Shani behema ika ora. Because when it comes to the animal, even if the animal dies, still, there is a residual value to the animal. And because the residual have value to the animal, so therefore, you know what the animal is? The animal is Karen. In other words, the pre that it produced is the child. The offspring that it produced is in fact a pre, because the animal itself will always have value. Whether it's alive or whether it's dead, it will always have value. And that's why, from an accounting standpoint, the animal is always going to be viewed as the principal, and the offspring is going to be viewed as a dividend. However, when it comes to a shivcha, in the event that she dies, so then there will be no residual value, and so therefore the child that it produced cannot be viewed as a dividend. Okay. Am Ravuna Barchia, Am Rishmo Alachi Kechananya. So, okay, fine. So we just learned the machlokas. We had a machlokas tanayim. And oddly enough, interestingly enough, Shmuel says Allah is like Chananya. So Amar Rav Nachman Afagav Amar Shmuel Allah is like Chananya. Now we just said that the halach is like Chananya, which means what? That in order for something to be viewed as a pre, so the it has to be able to reproduce. So Moda Chananya Shim Nizgarshna. No sanas damim v'not lasan mimnei shevach beis avia. But still she has an opportunity to buy back her shvachas. Meaning, so we just learned together that according to the Chananya, the vlad of a shivcha is going to belong to him. Okay, but let's say the marriage ends in divorce, so she can buy back the shivcha. In other words, he's the owner of the shivcha, the vlad, but she can buy it back. Why? Family heirloom. We've had this idea express itself earlier in the Masechta, and good, and we get to say it again. And that is that there are certain items, and over here I know we're not talking about an item, but still, there are certain things which have sentimental value. The Gemara understood that. So this particular family has been in the family all these years, generations. All right, I'll dramatize a little bit. So those of Adam have been with us for generations. So even though. When she goes into a marriage, and now they have a vlad, and that vlad belongs to the husband, that as per the sheet of Chananya, which the Gemara just paskin, that we do paskin like Chananya, all that's true, but because of the family heirloom / sentimental value to it, so therefore she has the right to buy it back. But she has to buy it back, though. In other words, because it belongs to him. Okay. Amarav Nachman Ichnisu Lo Eiz. Let's say she goes into marriage with a goat. Alechalava. And the for milking purposes, or rachel legizasa, or sheep for shearing, so tarnigol sabet zasa, or chickens for eggs, dekol peirasav a palm tree for its dates. So ochav aholechashitich la'keren. So what the husband now could do is that the husband could basically enjoy the peiros. There is going to be diminishing value to the principal. Gemara says, yeah, I understand. I get it. I get it. I'm Rav Nachman Ayla Leglima. So, let's say she comes in with a garment. Pere Have. The usage of that garment, that's Peros. So, Machse Beva Azo Adekalia. And so, therefore, he can make usage of it. And it's going to have diminishing value of the actual garment itself. Okay, good. It's got diminishing value.
Who's big it was originally?
She comes into the marriage with the beggar.
Was it hers?
Yeah.
So is he wearing women's clothing?
In other words, when hers meaning I was answering yes to the ownership. Right. Okay. but hers. Thank you. That was. Okay. Good. Okay. Come on, Ki Aitana. Gemara. Okay, I thought we were going to finish a little early. Okay, the Kaitan of the Gemara says, okay, now it follows the following brisa. The Tanya we learned in the brisa, Malach. Let me pronounce it better. Melach. Okay, salt farm, salt mine, vehachol. Or a quarry. So hareze peros. So over there, so it reproduces. Okay, please don't. I mean, you can ask me, but I don't know enough about salt mining or about quarries to explain to you how it reproduces. But okay, no, they reproduce. Okay, Pirshol Gafriz Mechuper Shol Tzrif. So a sulfur mine and what's this next one? Okay, what is it? Sand mine. Okay, whatever. Rabbi Meir Omer Karen and Chachamim Omer Peros. So here now a debate in terms of whether or not it qualifies as a Karen or whether it qualifies as a Pri. And again, the nafka mina, of course, is who does it belong to? Does it belong to the husband or belongs to the woman? And so therefore what comes out over here is that there is a position that as long that's good, there will be diminishing values, but as long as there is some residual value, so then whatever usages you can get out of it belong to him. And good, and that's like the garment, right? The garment where, of course, there's going to be diminishing value, but as long as there is some residual remaining value, so therefore all the usages go to the husband. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Makom Shiyafekocha, Rabbi Shimon Ayin Tanakama. So the Gemara says, now, you know what Rabbi Shimon did? Is that Rabbi Shimon just articulated the position of the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, and that's great, meaning we're going all the way back to our Mishnah and the Amud Aleph. That's great, but when all said and done, he's not giving us any newsflash. Now, it happens to be that he's expressing it brilliantly. In other words, whatever is hers on the way in is going to be his on the way out. Whatever is his on the way in is going to be hers on the way out. Good. So it's a beautiful expression, but it's just a repetition. So Amar Rava, the Mechubar Mishas Yitzias Yitzia Ikamenayu. So the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon is going to be a fruit that are connected to the ground as they're exiting the marriage. In other words, the Tanakhama did not describe those fruit on the exit. The Tanakhama only described that fruit on the entrance. And remember, according to the Chachamim, how did the Chachamim qualify that? They qualified that as peros, meaning even though they were connected to the ground, but still, in other words, they're peros. They're peros and they qualify as peros. But the Chachamim never described them on the exit. And so the Gemara says that's the difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. Where upon the exit, how are they going to qualify? So Rabbi Shimon says, well, if they're peros on the entrance, they're peros on the exit. And what the Chachamim are arguing is that no, they're peros on the entrance, but not peros on the exit. Okay. And then, of course, you have to explain what's the difference between entrance and exit, and that itself deserves its own explanation. Okay. Which, quite frankly, I don't have one, but Adkan. It'll take us to the end of today's daf. We're going to stop over here. And tomorrow we'll start with the Mishnah. I know it'd be better if we got to the next Mishnah. Okay. Anyway, let's quickly recap our day. Beginning of today's daf, what an exciting discussion regarding shielding assets from your husband. In other words, you're going to get married and you don't want him to get his hands on the assets that you've now earned, accumulated, whatever, and you want to shield it. Is there a way to shield it? Yep. Absolutely. Okay, and the Gemara seems to be endorsing basically legal tactics in terms of protecting your assets from your husband. And a lengthy discussion in the beginning of today's daf regarding what is the proper method of shielding those assets. How do you structure the contract so that you're basically creating a shell corporation in order to make sure that your husband does not obtain those assets. Good. So that's what we discussed in the beginning of today's daf. And then from the Mishnah, on the middle of Ayin Tesa Man Aleph until where we got to right now, which is the next Mishnah. So a detailed discussion, accounting discussion as what is going to be qualifying as Karen and what's going to be qualifying as a Pri. Because the Karen belongs to her, the peros belong to him. And so therefore it's an important discussion to be had in terms of what is a Karen and what's a Pri. Okay.